Hey everyone, and welcome back to Your Money, Your Life podcast, episode 219 of the podcast. Apologies for the late upload of last week's podcast, but we do have this one. We'll have it uploaded early for those that are commuters and want to listen on their commute. But make sure if you're listening, you like, subscribe, 5-star rate and review wherever you are listening. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit the notification bell, subscribe to the channel as well. We will dive right in to important news of the day. I want to make sure we start off where we need to start off and where we always start off, which is the market update. So far this morning, the market started a little bit higher in trading. We moved up a bit higher in trading slightly. The big news was the producer price index reading for March, which came in below estimates. So another, if you think about it, you have the consumer price index, the producer price index. Consumer, of course, as a name scribes, is on the consumer side and showing how prices are moving for the consumer, and the producer price index is on the producer side, showing how wholesale prices for producers of goods, how those prices are moving for them. And these numbers on the wholesale side were a little bit tamer than on the consumer side that came out yesterday. And so we saw yesterday's numbers from the market on the consumer side, and they were a little bit higher, a little bit hotter than people expected, and that contributed to yesterday's dip in the market. So if you look at 5-day trading, yesterday would have been the 10th. We saw the market take a little bit of dip after investors digested the consumer price numbers, and now we're seeing investors digest the producer price numbers, which again were a little bit higher. Not a crazy movement. Again, consumer prices grew 0.4% in March and 3.5% from a year earlier. This was data that we received yesterday. And so now people are wondering when the Fed will cut rates. There were supposed to be 3 rate cuts this year, and now people are starting to move to 2 rate cuts from 3 this year. And this is supposed to begin potentially in September, which I said fall a while ago. We've been saying fall. And so we'll see if that holds. But right now we're seeing what kind of the market's digesting, which is those two items. And the Fed has said that they will see bumps in the road when it comes to inflation moderating. So the number that we saw yesterday on the consumer price index was actually one of those bumps. It was a little bit higher than was expected by projections, by estimates, by economists. And so that is the big news there. Again, producer price index came in a little bit tamer. On a 12-month basis, 2.1%. So that's not as bad. So these are some interesting numbers that we're seeing here. And we're going to keep our eyes on this inflation report because that's the biggest driver of the market. And again, as I said, so far, today is a little bit higher, but we'll see how much that holds. 5 days, a little bit lower. Year to date, the S&P 500, still, it's still in the range, roughly what I had predicted right now. Again, we're only a little bit over a quarter in trading this year, and we're about 8.89% up on the year on the S&P 500. But if you look at the longer durations, pretty strong performances from the market there. So let's dive into current events. And one story that we saw was Wall Street is spurring office recovery. So the office occupancy rate in New York stands at nearly 80% of pre-pandemic levels, because as we know, during the pandemic, it was not even a thought that you had to work in office. Post-pandemic, now it is a thought. And Wall Street is one of the people pushing the return to offices. Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Miami is also another city that shared in the rebound, but they're saying that people have to work back in the office. Does this make sense to me? If you think I've worked in on Wall Street, I understand how it operates. And a lot of it is just like in-office work, FaceTime, a lot of stuff that, it may not be as the same as in like tech, right? Or tech or different areas of in different industries that are less about those kind of old archaic kind of vibes. So the return to office rates in New York and Miami led 7 major US markets, topping the national average of 63%. So it's only still 63%, which is really low. That's actually really low. San Francisco has had the biggest jump in office attendance last year at 45%, and still sits in the last place. Because again, if you think of San Francisco, that's a tech hub. So of course, tech companies using technology, they would be a little bit more flexible in the come back to office rules. And so that really resonates with me there. 12 months ago, this person shared their return to office prediction. New York is approaching 80%. Can I see the future? No. So this person was apparently saying that people were going to be returning back to the office. So we'll see. You know, it's still 80% of pre-pandemic. That's still 20% off. So we'll see how much that grows. Speaking of tech companies, Amazon CEO is cutting cost again, but he's shifting to AI in investments, which a lot of companies are shifting to investing in AI, to selling AI, to doing everything to push AI and cutting costs other areas that may not be as profitable. So he's vowing to keep costs down at Amazon while investing in growing fields like AI. He published an annual shareholder letter where he emphasized the importance and primitive services such as Amazon Web Services that are foundational systems on top of which new projects and businesses can grow. He believes that generative AI could be Amazon's next such world-changing service. Amazon has slimmed down significantly, cutting more than 27,000 jobs between 2022 and 23 and announcing more layoffs this year. They upped their stake in that Anthropic company we talked about a couple weeks ago. So yeah, this is no different from the other strategies of most big tech CEOs. Pushing AI, try to cut costs, try to remain profitable, because the growth that they saw in 2021, 2022 is gone, and they're trying to make sure that the bottom line stays where it's at. Being a company that's been having an up and down profitable and non-profitable journey, Peloton started as a life at home fitness company, but considering its emphasis on content, it's now more of a media company. Last year, the introduction of three app only subscription tiers to draw people in the ecosystem. And this year, instructors began providing content to TikTok. Peloton is trying to figure out how to keep its audience engaged, and it remains to see if Peloton can ride it out. Its valuation is nosedived from $50 billion to $2.1 billion. So The Verge did an article apparently showing, you know, how Peloton's trying to shift their strategy from just hardware and into actually a company that's focused more on like their content, their influencer instructors, which makes sense to me. If you think about the hardware, it's bike is the biggest part of it, but the content, the instructors, all those things are super, super important to their ecosystem and is what brings people in, right? Like people like Cody, they like all the different instructors. And so that is one of their biggest sticking points. And of course they like the fitness and working out, speaking of someone that uses Peloton literally every day. But as a company, I think they have a lot to work on. If you think about the service, we talked about how we tried to get our bike fixed for over 3, 4, 5 months. It was like half a year almost. The service side of things, not great. The operational side, not great at all, as you could see in the valuation nosedive. So a lot going on with this company. Apparently, they cut their merchandise and now have partnered with Lululemon exclusively. Maybe the merchandise wasn't profitable. So they're trying a lot of things that aren't sticking. So I don't know how long they'll last before they're bought out, especially if that valuation keeps dipping. I see a company coming in and buying Peloton and trying to make shift and change things over. WrestleMania, for those people that still watch wrestling in adulthood, I don't anymore, but a lot of people do. And it's coming back strong. They're introducing influencers into their storylines. They have a lot of big stars. They have old stars coming back like The Rock. So they had their big WrestleMania pay-per-view. And NBC Universal streamed. It was a two-night broadcast of WrestleMania. I didn't know they did two nights of WrestleMania. It was watched for 1.3 billion minutes, making it the service's most streamed entertainment event ever in terms of overall usage of the platform. So it wasn't pay-per-view. It was actually just available to stream on Peacock. I had no clue. It ranks behind first live broadcast of an NFL game. So NBC Universal is among the potential merger candidates for Paramount Global, and according to a recent report by the Wall Street Journal. So WrestleMania 40 had the highest grossing event in WWE history, topping WrestleMania 39 by 78%. Wow. And WWE recently inked a $5 billion deal with Netflix to air its flagship show WWE Raw and other programs. So yeah, WrestleMania and wrestling is kind of making a huge, huge comeback. If you think about what they did, so it's like a, I mean, they were a public company. They were actually merged with UFC and under the whole holding company of WME. And something recently just happened with them. I haven't kept up with it, but big company, big business, still entertaining for a lot of people, driving butts in seats, driving eyeballs to the TV screen. So I think that's interesting to watch how they continue to do that. Really, really incredible. We'll keep our eyes on that. In other news, we talked about the C-suite thing last week. Caitlin Clark effect. For those who watched the Final Four games, the women's basketball games, and the men's, with Caitlin Clark and all the women, congrats to actually South Carolina for winning the championship. They won, went undefeated. Dawn Staley, the whole team. They have a talented group of players right there. And then, of course, you had Bear facing off against Caitlin Clark, who's the biggest star in women's college basketball. And end up losing that. They ended up losing. Iowa ended up losing that game, but they drew in a record number of people watching. And we talked about this a bit. We're actually curious on what will happen going forward when it comes to women's sports, women's college basketball, WNBA, because Caitlin Clark is going to the WNBA. And so what will happen with women's sports? What will happen with in general, will the eyeballs stay? Are they just following Caitlin Clark or are they following women's sports? I'm actually curious on that. If he's projected to be the number one pick to the Indiana Fever. So what is the actual, is it just her or is it the actual sports product that people like? We'll keep our eyes on that. I'm actually really curious to see what happens there. Let's get into our roundtable, folks, and talk about taxes, because of course taxes are coming up. The deadline is 4:15. And there's so much that people have when it comes to questions, or they try to do things last minute. We've talked about this. We talk about this every year. You can contribute to your IRAs, Roth or traditional, right? And the limit for 2024 is 7,000. The limit for 2023 was 6,500. And you can contribute for last year, for 2023, up until tax day of 2024. So 4:15, literally in a few days on Monday, it's the last day to contribute for 2023. So we're seeing a lot of people try to hurry, get their last contributions in. But again, you can do it monthly, meaning you could contribute monthly per month into your IRA accounts and set a budget based on what your budget is to do that. Or you can contribute at the end of the year when you've saved up or whatever. Either one works. Or you could do both, right? You contribute per month. You still have room. You can throw the rest of the money in there to contribute to max it out for the year. Maybe this is confused. None of these traditionals or Roths or these accounts are on the face better than the other, right? They're not, one doesn't do anything better than the other. They're just preferences based on things that are really hard to predict. Like, so the traditional IRA or the pre-tax IRA, similar to your 401k, is taking pre-tax money, meaning it hasn't been taxed. So the money you put in there that grows for a bit when you retire and start living off that money, and when you withdraw from it, you'll pay income tax at that time at the income tax rate you are, whatever, at whatever age you are that you retired. So that's hard to have a crystal ball. No one will know what you're gonna be making at that time. So that's the traditional IRA. The Roth IRA, of course, as we know, is after tax. A lot of people like it because they put the money in there, it grows, and they know that they don't have to pay taxes as it when they withdraw the money later on, and don't have to worry about what their income tax rate will be because it's after tax money. Or to note, the Roth IRA has income restrictions. So if you make over a certain amount on a filing basis, you can't just directly contribute to a Roth IRA. And so that's something to note as well. Individual account, another account is just an regular investment account. And it's not an IRA. It doesn't have these restrictions. Doesn't have contribution. Does not have contribution limits per year. But people, you know, love to get these, you know, mixed up, confused. Their tax account saying, "Hey, did you do this? Did you do that?" There's nothing better than the other. It's just a preference. The big main thing you need to know is that, like, saving your money, whether it's in a Roth, traditional, individual account, is a good thing to do, right? Like, it's not, there, that's the best thing to do, is just to do that rather than like worrying about which account it is so much. Just save your money, let it grow, and just pick an account. You can always make adjustments, but just pick one, invest, save your money in there, let it be grown and invested by an expert. And then let it go from there. It's not too hard to rack your brain on, super hard on that. There's other account types, SEP IRA, solo 401k, we've talked about those for individuals that are self-employed. They have, like, the SEP IRA, for instance, has a higher contribution limit. Rollovers. Don't forget to do your rollovers. If you left an employer in the last couple of days, last couple of years, I should say, roll over your funds into an IRA, which allows your advisor to manage it. It's not a taxable event, allows you to resume contributions, allows more investment options for the advisor. So again, these are all things that you're probably getting to refill on or review on over the course of the year because you're doing taxes and you're like, oh, I forgot to contribute to this, or this. If you're self-employed, you can potentially get tax deductions for contributing to a traditional IRA or a SEP IRA if you're fully self-employed. So there's different benefits and different things. Again, don't rack your brain on them too hard. They're not some like golden, you know, egg or nugget. It's just saving your money and investing is better than not. So those are some things to think about as you're running down to this tax time. I know it's a lot for people that try to figure it out. It's most of the moves are minimal. The big move is to, again, increase cash flow if possible. So folks, we always have those questions. If you have more of those questions, make sure to hit me up. We'll cover them if we can. If you're a client of ours, we like to work with our people and make sure that they're all set up. Another week, folks, we appreciate you for joining. Make sure you share, like, subscribe, pass this on to your family and friends so they can get the help they need. We'll talk to you next week.